Don't know why there's no sun up in the sky. Stormy weather since my man and I ain't together.
Billie Holiday there with Stormy Weather. Well, stormy weather, climate change, weather of all sorts. Can art change the world? Can art help stop climate change? Well, the Art Plus Climate Change Equals Change 2015 Festival in Melbourne is a major jamboree of exhibitions and talks and forums that involve 25 galleries and a swarm of arts and artists and speakers. There's all sorts of things going on. And its aim is to raise public awareness about the challenges that are posed by climate change. Kelly Galatley is the director of the Ian Potter Museum of Art at the University of Melbourne, and she's with us right now. Good morning, Kelly.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. And also with us is the Danish artist Søren Dahlgaard, who, he's got a caravan in the middle of town. Good morning. Nice to have you here.
Yeah, good morning.
Nice to have you on the program. So, Kelly, this festival pulls together a whole range of artists and galleries. There are speakers. I think there are going to be 5 weeks of images all around the city of Melbourne. Do you think art can change people's minds? Aren't people pretty much decided on where they stand on all this?
I do think art can change people's minds, and I think everyone, you know, there are 25 various institutions who have contributed to the Climb Art Festival around town and across regional Victoria, and, you know, everyone has their own motivations for doing so, but I think the great thing about this festival is it doesn't debate the issue of is climate change real? What's, you know, this is not a either-or scenario. Everyone signed on acknowledging that climate change is here. It's, you know, we're at a crisis point. The science.
That's about moving the debate on.
Well, yeah, the science, you know, yeah. for the best of intentions of our, you know, scientists, we are at a crisis point because I think people effectively shut down. We've almost got to a stage of white noise about these issues where, you know, people either tune out or they feel, you know, powerless to do something. And I think art offers, you know, it's not about sort of motivating people to get up the next morning and recycle more. It's about opening up spaces for contemplation, to think about these issues in a different way and to have a sort of physical and emotive experience.
But aren't you interested in changing people's actual practices as well?
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, we could
contemplate away while the world burns. I mean.
Absolutely. But if this is not a... The Potter's perspective, and there are many perspectives on this issue, but at the Potter we decided, for example, in one of our exhibitions, Nature Revelation, to take this from the notion of what we stand to lose. So we've picked up on that sense of the historic notion of the sublime, the sort of grand majesty of nature, and created an exhibition that very deliberately provokes audiences to feel something. So there's no sort of didacticism there.
So what have you got in that exhibition? Give us a little taste of it. This is at the Potter Museum of Art at the University of Melbourne. Confusingly, in Melbourne, there are two museums called the Potter.
Indeed, there are two Potters.
The Ian Potter Museum is at the University of Melbourne.
So that exhibition, Nature Revelation, starts with a suite of extraordinary photographs by Ansel Adams. And Adams, you know, is one of America's foremost fine print photographers, was really looking at the landscape in all its majesty.
But so we think of those heroic
absolutely.
Black and white photographs of Yosemite National Park.
Absolutely.
Those are his kind of trademark
But
works.
Central to his practice was also a very clear conservation sort of ethic, and work around national parks and particularly Yosemite were directly linked to his practice. So we use that as a starting point to talk about the way in which an artistic practice has affected change, and then extrapolate out to contemporary work by Australian and international artists who are looking at these issues in a much sort of broader poetic way. So we have an enormous 12-metre hand-drawn whale by Jonathan Delafield Cook, which is an extraordinarily beautiful thing. And it's hard not to stand in front of that, and you actually are dealing with the physical scale of a whale, and you feel kind of inconsequential, even though it's a beautiful drawn entity, and think about the majesty of animals such as that. But there are also works in the exhibition, such as Bernard Smild's photographs, where he's created clouds in interior spaces and then photographs them. You have this kind of ethereality and the kind of magic of nature.
How do you mean he's created clouds in interior spaces? How do you do that?
He has. He's set up the conditions to effectively create cloud formations indoors,
right,
and then photograph them.
That's got very damp at his place.
It looks pretty cool.
Yeah, and another work that's atmospheric is a work called Public Smog by Amy Balkin.
Oh, fantastic project. Amy Balkin is an American artist who, she launched this project at Documenta in 2011. And it's a very sort of propositional project that's based, interestingly, in the kind of legality of getting things listed on the World Heritage Register. So her project, Public Smog, is a campaign where she petitions representatives of government to get the world's atmosphere listed on the UNESCO World Heritage Register. And effectively in doing so, it means that you can't pollute it.
Right. Also, you could charge tickets for people to breathe. Come along and breathe some heritage air. This should work well. This is Books and Arts on RN. I'm Michael Cathcart, and we're talking about an exhibition, well, a whole sort of festival that's on in Melbourne at the moment, which is called Clime Art. Is that what it's called? I mean, it's also been billed as the Art Plus Climate Change Equals Change Festival, which seems like a mouthful to me.
But well, Art is the body that, which is a body that was set up by Guy Abrahams and Bronwyn Johnson, and they've effectively put the festival together.
Right. Let's call it the Clime Art Festival because the other thing's a bit of a mouthful. So the Danish artist Søren Dahlgaard's with us as well. Now, you've got a caravan in the middle of town and it's got palm trees on the top.
Yeah, it's true. It's called the Maldives Exodus Caravan Show, and it's one of the 25 exhibitions in the festival. It's the only exhibition that's organized outside an institution. It's placed on Federation Square for the next 3 weeks.
Right in the centre of Melbourne. Well, it's its own institution. It's a travelling institution, your caravan, isn't it? Because I was looking at it online and it had been photographed in Venice.
Yeah, so it started in Venice biennial 2013, 2 years ago. And it's been travelling to 5 different countries since. I'm an artist, but this is sort of my curatorial project. I organised it. But the inflatable tropical island is my sculptural sort of contribution.
So the palm trees on the top are part of an inflatable tropical island.
Yeah, it's an inflatable tropical island, and it actually fits in my suitcase. So it's really easy to travel with the show because all the rest of the content of the exhibition is not physical material. It's all in Dropbox. It's all videos and prints I print out. So inside the caravan is the rest of the exhibition.
Must be hard work blowing up that island every time you go. I mean, it's hard enough when you go camping and you've decided you've got to blow up your mattress. You must be have strong lungs there.
Yeah, I have to get up early. Yeah.
Those Scandinavian lungs, they're magnificent things. So what's in the caravan? What have you curated inside your caravan?
It's a big group show with some Maldivian artists.
It's not a big group show. It's a tiny caravan.
Yeah, it's a small physical show, but it's jam-packed of content, and it's big because there's a lot of artists in it. It's about 25.
Huh.
So, but I count everybody who contributes. So one of them is Nasheed, the former Democratic President of Maldives, who has now been jailed. So that's our current story we're dealing with. He's written a text. Then we've got Maldivian music in the caravan. We got a lot of videos, art videos, and we also have screening The Island President, a really well-known documentary about Nasheed's rise to become the first elected Democratic President in Maldives, and the whole climate change from the summit in Copenhagen.
Now, let's make it clear why the Maldives are important for climate change. So the Maldives are in the Indian Ocean, and they are a string of islands and atolls. I think there's 26 of them. And they're famous because their high point, the highest point in the Maldives, is only 2.4 metres above the sea, which is the lowest high point of any country in the world.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically sand. I mean, the coral islands is basically sandbanks.
Right. Yeah. So the claim is that the Maldives are actually threatened with flooding because the expectation is that due to climate change, the oceans will rise and the Maldives will go under.
Yeah, if the sea level rise, they will go under. But also just what they've experiencing in the last 10 years and also all over the world with more extreme weather. So the storms, you know, they may create erosions and stuff like that. And I was just speaking with my wife, who is from the Maldives, and this is my connection to the Maldives. and we also lived there, was that young people in the Maldives today, they don't know if there will be a Maldives when they're older in 50 years from now. It's quite an extreme situation, mm-hmm. if you think about it.
I was interested to see that your project originally was seen by the public in Venice, because Venice is another place that's threatened by rising water, of course.
Yeah, so Venice and Maldives have some nice parallels that are quite interesting, and with the flooding. So it's quite different, Venice, where the streets are canals and it's a town, and Maldives is a country, but they have a lot of similarities. You transport yourself around on boats in the same way.
Mm.
And interestingly, with the Amy Balcon project, when she initially did the call out, you know, the propositional call out to leaders to sign on for this petition to the UN, it was the former President Nasheed who was the only respondent, not surprisingly.
Who supported this.
And so...
This idea that the atmosphere should be put on the World Heritage Register.
Yeah. And so the Australian iteration of this project is the petition to Australia's representative at the UN to support that action sort of financially to enable nations to take up this petition.
Yeah, I can just add that Nasheed, the former Democratic president in Maldives and the really well-known climate activist you just mentioned, he's really into art. I see him as actually an amazing artist. If you remember the image from 2009, just before the climate summit in Copenhagen, where he was having a cabinet meeting underwater, that image went around the world. So I'm thinking of him as a performance artist, because it was such a powerful image. And but he's a climate activist and then also an activist for freedom of speech.
Actually, Soren, when you make that point, it occurs to me that most good politicians are performance artists. Well, they are. Mm. They're very good at staging public events in which they're seen doing stuff that gets a message across or reinforces an image they want to reinforce. It's actually the performance aspect of being an effective politician.
It makes me think of acting and spin doctor stuff, and it's a little different, but this performance that she did was an amazing image.
It's only different because you agree with the message, though.
Yeah, no, it's true. Yeah, I agree, yeah. Yeah. I see your point.
Kelly Galletly from the Potter, it's often said that you can't make great art if you're pushing a political message. Art which is 100% sure of its political message is propaganda, the critics would say anyway. You know, there is this idea, especially among artists, I mean, who sit in this room, they tell me, oh, no, I don't want to be political. I don't want to be didactic. I want to have a kind of grey area. This is an exhibition which you began by saying doesn't allow for a grey area. We're sure of our political position. Does that compromise the quality of the art?
No, I don't think so. Not at all, because I think artists have always engaged with difficult and pressing issues. It's just the way in which you do that through your practice that is important. And if we think about, even on its sort of most fundamental level, if you think about the history of art from those moments of, you know, the first moments of mark making in caves, you know, through to the way in which the landscape was dealt with in paintings during the Industrial Revolution, you know, this kind of sense of romance. Those issues have always been there. I mean, landscape painting is a widely accepted genre. Of course, that's a deep and often politicised engagement with the natural world. So, in a way, I don't think we're looking at dramatic shifts here.
No, well, artists are often sure of their beliefs. And also, they don't need to be oppositional. I mean, the whole history of Christian art is the history of people who presumably believed in what they were painting. And you don't feel that their art is compromised because it's a celebration of the risen Lord.
I mean, there's an element of contemporary practice that does take on that kind of interventionist sort of, and plays with those propagandistic kind of codes. But I think what you see across this festival when people experience the 25 exhibitions is great diversity and if there was too much of that, we'd effectively be just doing the same thing that we're finding with science, with art, which is making people shut down because they just don't want to
hear
it.
Well, it's a very exciting lineup, and it's going to run for 5 weeks, and there's full of things to see. So if you're passing through Melbourne or if you live in Melbourne, there's lots to look at. Thank you for coming by. It's been good to meet you both.
Pleasure. Yeah. Thank you.
Kelly Galatley is the director of the Ian Potter Museum. That's the one at the University of Melbourne. And Soren Dalgard is the artist who's put a caravan in the middle of Melbourne and put an inflatable island on the top. And he's crammed the work of how many artists?
About 25 artists.
25 artists.
Can I just mention?
Inside, no, you can't. This is Books and Arts. We're on air, we're online, and you're on your ABC radio app. And if you'd like to comment on any of the things that we've been discussing here today, why don't you jump onto our website or comment on Facebook? You'll find us at ABCRN Books and Arts. Just find a link there to the Art and Climate Festival.